You're about to listen to an episode of Childhood Remastered.
Check out our website at childhoodremastered.com for information on how to subscribe and where to find us on social media.
Now, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to another edition of Childhood Remastered. This is the podcast where we look back on the cartoons and TV shows and movies of our youth and see if they're still worth a damn.
Or not.
Or not, but that's far too often the case. I'm Sean.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're looking at a very, very popular show, popular enough that it's been brought back from the brink of death, well actually death, and it is playing now with a new season. And that show is Samurai Jack.
Okay, I can't do the voice anymore. It's gonna kill me if I have to do it.
Look. Sometimes you just gotta change it up and do something different.
Keep it interesting.
Yeah.
Today we're gonna drink some Japanese beer in honor of Samurai Jack, which is vaguely Japanese.
No, he's totally Japanese.
Well, he's supposed to be. It's an American cartoon show voiced by an African American guy, but Japanese beer. So
by the way, so we're drinking.
It's a beer I found called Aoni.
Aoni, yeah.
And it better be good because it was $7 a can.
Yeah. Look at the top of it. The top of it has like Braille.
Yeah, it's got Braille.
I remember reading somewhere, and I don't know if it was Japan, but I remember reading somewhere that some countries out there actually put Braille on their alcoholic beverages so blind people know that they're drinking an alcoholic beverage.
That's cool. Well, it's probably just like the name of the beverage in general. That way they know what they're going to drink.
Yeah. You're drinking beer!
Perfect.
So let's try these.
And see what we got. We also got some sake today.
We're going just full-on weevoo.
Because screw it. Yeah.
If we're going to watch it...
We're going to leave our body pillows at home, but, you know...
Well, I am at home, so my body pillow's in the other room.
Oh, creepy. Delicious. So, as we mentioned, Samurai Jack.
Interesting.
Is it good?
It's like an IPA, but I feel like it's got almost like a Belgian flavor to it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Actually, I like that.
It's got like floral notes.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. I'm down with this.
Yeah, the beer is called... You know what? I'll take a picture of it. And I will tweet it out. It's called A-O, then O-N-I. Aoni. Or Ao... I don't even know. So, check it out. If you can find it. We got it at Total Wine. Not that they're sponsoring us or anything. We just...
No. But we'll take free stuff.
They have a lot of beer.
So, we're doing Samurai Jack today.
Yes.
What... Do you remember this show?
Abso-friggin-lutely.
When it was on?
This
came on in 2001. So, we were actually... technically out of high school by
now. This isn't really a show that I can say was from my youth per se, but
it's from our early man-child days.
Yeah, this podcast is really, it's not necessarily just us reliving stuff that was from our actual childhood, like from the 80s and the early 90s, but we can look back on stuff that we watched because we both watched this show.
Or stuff that other people watched, which is why we're willing to take some examples. We may be doing some stuff from the 60s and 70s too.
So. Yeah, why not? But no, I absolutely watched this show, Cartoon Network. I want to say that we did have cable. There was a good portion of grade school, and I want to say a little bit of high school, where we did not have cable TV. But the later half of high school, we did have cable because we had moved. My mom had got remarried, and we moved. And Samurai Jack was actually one of my stepdad's favorite cartoons of all
really?
Time. Oh, he loved it.
Well, and, he had good taste.
Yeah, and I watched it a lot, too, and I loved it. The show is, for a, I'm not, I wouldn't say a kid, but for, you know, a 17, 18, 19-year-old, the show is... It's really engaging. It's super action-packed.
Well, the target demographic is for kids, and it's awesome for kids.
Yeah, because it's not... I mean, it's violent, but it's not super, like, gory violent.
No, so we picked this show, and I, you know, showed it to my kid, who loved the heck out of it so much that I didn't just watch the first six episodes this week. I watched the whole first season, which I don't normally get to do. But I did for this, and this is a show that came out in 2001, And the first three episodes were released together as part of a like a TV movie that were put out, and then the rest of the show came out afterwards. And it's a show created by this guy named Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yes. And if he sounds Russian, it's because he is.
He is.
Comrade Tartakovsky. I can't even say his freaking name.
Tartakovsky.
Yeah. Hey, but Comrade Tartakovsky.
If he sounds remotely familiar, or if you look this show up, if you're not familiar with it, and it looks familiar, it's because he also created Dexter's Lab.
Yeah.
So.
And Powerpuff Girls.
He worked on a bunch of that early Cartoon Network Day stuff. Originally, he intended to develop the series, that kind of had this like cinematic scope that also incorporated action and humor and particularly intricate artistry. And I would say this show absolutely accomplished.
No, he 100% succeeded, because if the goal was to create a cinematic animated show, he absolutely 100% succeeded.
Yeah.
There are elements of just like direction and I don't want to say photography, but just like animation choices that very much make it a stylized and stylish animation
system. It's been said that the movie Kung Fu Panda's opening sequence, the credits and stuff, mm-hmm. is actually either a direct homage to or is inspired by this show. And I went and I looked it up to watch it. I think it totally is, because it's absolutely like in the same art style and everything. This show is it's almost like moving paintings.
Yes. Yes. And I feel like that was
it was intentional.
Yeah, because the show, like we said earlier, the show is vaguely Japanese. Jack is a samurai from what looks to be feudal Japan.
Yes.
And the show starts off in the first episode, the show starts off with Jack's father explaining the history of like Aku and thwarting the evil. And that explanation of what happened in the past was sort of presented as a bunch of Japanese paintings.
Yes. So the first episode is kind of, it's almost like a explanation of how we got to the story of Samurai Jack. It's like him as a kid, Aku destroying the town, and then a kind of really long montage with no dialogue.
Yes.
It goes on for a very long time, and then he learns all these skills, gets a sword, and then goes back, fights Aku, who then transports him way off into the distant future, hopefully at a time in which he'll be able to beat Samurai Jack.
Yeah, because he was losing.
Because he was about to lose, and he didn't want to lose.
And I was...
So it's kind of like a fish out of water. The whole series is, and it's actually inspired by Frank Miller's series Ronin.
The comic book.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, it's directly inspired. So
I've never read that one.
So if you don't know what Ronin is, it's essentially, so the premise is of a masterless samurai warrior thrown into a dystopic future in order to battle a shape-shifting demon.
Oh, so Samurai Jack.
It's Samurai Jack.
Yeah. So this is the animated version of that show. You know, so when I was watching, because I rewatched them all this morning, the ones that we were covering. And as I was watching episode one, all I was thinking while I was watching it is this has to be one of the best, if not the best, like origin explanation episode, like things of a show ever. Because it goes over every single thing that you need to go. It establishes
any question that you would have about his past is immediately explained. It's done beautifully.
Yeah.
And in a way that's cool. His training montage stuff is actually kind of interesting to watch. And that's cool. So
you get his background.
I'd say this episode has some of the least action.
Yeah.
The first episode does, but you don't care. This show is so beautiful.
You're getting Jack's origin story in the first episode.
Right.
And like I said, it's fun to watch, and it's also, you get all the information you need to. You know who the bad guy is, you know who the good guys are, you know how he got to the point where he was, you know why, like, basically why...
What his quest is.
Yeah, what his quest is and what the plot of the show is. And this all happens in 22 minutes. And you're not having a whole lot of questions about what's going on.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, we mentioned quest. So when Tartakovsky pitched this idea for this to a Cartoon Network exec named Mike Lazo, he specifically remembered it in an interview. He said, hey, remember David Carradine and Kung Fu? Wasn't that cool? And I was like, yeah, that's really cool. That was literally the pitch. No, that was the pitch. Was just, hey, let's make a kid's version of Kung Fu. And it really is. Each episode, it's episodic, so it's not like you had to have seen the episode before to really know what's going on.
Yeah, I want to say there's a couple, like, two-parter episodes.
They bleed through sometimes episode to episode, but the story is basically, in every episode, Jack is trying to find some something or comes across some something that could possibly help him get back to the past.
Long ago in a distant land, I, Aku, the shape-shifting master of darkness, unleashed an unspeakable evil. But a foolish samurai warrior wielding a magic sword stepped forth to oppose me. Before the final blow was struck, I tore open a portal in time and flung him into the future, where my evil is law. Now the fool seeks to return to the past and undo the future that is Aku.
Either that or he runs into someone who needs his help.
Right. But along the way of looking for a way to get back into his correct time period, it doesn't work out. And then he continues on his quest. And it's every episode. And it's
like
okay.
It's like Quantum Leap. Each time Jack hopes that this next leap will be the leap that takes him home.
He really does.
Yeah, he does.
So, you know, we mentioned Tartakovsky, but do you know what other stuff he's worked on? He worked on The Critic and Batman the Animated Series.
I did not know that. Was he just an animator for that?
I think he was an animator, and I think it's like storyboard animating. Or
okay, that makes sense.
Something.
I could see his style, because Tartakovsky, if you've never seen his stuff, you won't really know what I'm talking about. But if you've seen Powerpuff Girls or Dexter's Lab or Samurai Jack, he has a very clear style how he does his animation.
He produced the Powerpuff Girls too, which is sort of kind of in the same wheelhouse of animation style. I mean, Powerpuff Girls is like brighter, more cutesy, but it's like it's same kind of that the way the characters are drawn are very similar.
Yeah.
That very angular.
Yeah, so I could see him working as a storyboard artist for like Batman. Maybe not The Critic. I mean, I don't know. If he worked on The Critic, then sure, whatever. But
yeah. But well, and when we were picking this show, when I recommended it, you're like, oh yeah, he did Star Wars Clone Wars, and I had no idea. It didn't click for me. And I had to go back and look it up and like rewatch some of it because I completely forgot about it.
Yeah.
It was like a short 3 or 4 minute episode.
Yeah, they were quick
series.
Quick episodes that I wanna say debuted either shortly before or shortly after the episode 2 Clone Wars movie debuted.
I think it was
if it was before or after, but it was around the same time.
It was like 2003, 2004.
Yeah, it was a tie-in like product.
I think it happened after episode 2 because it's supposed to be the stuff that takes place between episode 2 and episode 3.
Yeah, so those, if you've never seen them, you should. It's the like Chris said, they're about 4 to 5 minutes long. There's some dialogue, but there's not always dialogue, and they essentially take they jump from Jedi General to Jedi General in each episode, where they show a part of the battle. Like there's a part with Plo Koon, there's a part with Shakti, there's a
Asajj Ventress.
Yeah, there's this part with she came in the longer regular series.
Yeah, but that was also his too.
Yeah, but there was my favorite one is the Mace Windu one, because Mace the I told you to watch it. I don't know if you had. But
I didn't get a chance, no.
But in the Mace Windu one, it shows Mace as the absolute badass that he's supposed to be. So he gets dropped on this planet. I forget if his ship gets shot down or what, but he gets dropped on this planet and it's just swarming with droids, like the big giant assault droids and the regular droids. Actually, I think it's all the assault droids, like the big giant ones that shoot out their hands.
Okay.
So he gets down there and he gets his lightsaber knocked away and he goes into his... this is getting a little Star Wars deep in the weeds, where he uses a form of lightsaber combat. I want to say it's the eighth form. It's Vapod or Vapod. It's the one that has like the tinge of the dark side in it, and not a lot of people do it. He's the only person that does it. Him and his apprentice, And I think his apprentice fell to the dark side because you basically take all the rage and anger and you actually focus it into fighting that you have inside you. So that episode shows him just going to town. I mean, like I said, it's only 4 or 5 minutes. It shows him going to town on all these droids, and his lightsaber combat doesn't involve lightsabers. He's literally just punching the shit out of the
That's
droids.
That's awesome.
And he blasts them all with force powers, and he like rips their heads off.
I need to watch this now.
Yeah, he beats the shit out of them. And that one actually shows, that episode shows why General Grievous has the Wheeze, because General Grievous comes down and the two of them have a fight. I think he gets his lightsaber back at that point. They actually have a fight, and Mace actually defeats him, and General Grievous goes to get away. And as he's getting away, Mace like does almost like a force choke on him and crushes his chest. And he grabs his chest, and then he starts wheezing, and that's supposed to be how he's like
how he got his wheeze,
and the rest.
Interesting.
Of
his,
yeah, no,
that's cool.
It's not a huge investment. It's like each episode is 5 minutes long, and maybe there's 10 or 12 episodes.
I think it was 20-something.
Okay, 20-something.
Still,
20-something.
Yeah,
that's like an hour. That's like 2 hours of your life for watching an entire series.
Yeah, which is pretty short. So I don't know if you know this. I didn't know this myself, but Tartakovsky also directed Hotel Transylvania.
I did not, and I actually, you know,
that movie. The first, okay,
the first one is entertaining.
I've seen both of them.
I've seen both of them too.
My kid loves these movies.
They're absolute kid bait.
They're so silly. And you know what though? They're not terrible to watch.
Yeah, they're not.
I don't mind watching them. If you don't know what they are, it's basically a world of monsters, and then the fish out of water in this case is a human who accidentally ends up with monsters and falls in love with Dracula's daughter.
Yeah, and Dracula's played by Adam Sandler, who just spends most of the movie talking like this.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
In fact, they make fun of it at one point.
I do not say blah, 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 blah.
Excuse me, do you know the best way to the airport?
Yes, fellow Dracula, there's only one way, blah, blah, blah.
But it's all blocked. We'll never make it in time.
You should have left an hour earlier. Blah, blah, blah.
I do not say blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. No, he totally...
He goes... He goes... What is the line? It's like, I'm Dracula, blah, blah, blah. I do not say blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, that is the exact
line. He goes, yeah, you kind of do, Drac. I do not say it. Whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, they're entertaining.
You know what? The second one's up on Netflix.
And I watched the first one on a plane.
Oh, well, so, yeah, go, there's tons of streaming sites out there. Go stream it.
And it's all of like Team Sandler. It's CeeLo Green. It's, well, he's not really Team Sandler, but it's Kevin James. It's David Spade. It's Chris Rock.
It's
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
He's in it too.
There's a bunch of like just random people in it. John Lovitz, of course, because John Lovitz is like always in that stuff.
Yeah.
So looking into this movie also, or into the show also, I didn't realize that they were, because I remember hearing about this, there was this Dark Crystal sequel that they were going to make that eventually got scrapped. I thought there was going to continue, but apparently it got turned into a comic series.
Oh, I have no idea. I like Dark Crystal, the movie. It's probably the scariest Jim Henson movie there is.
Yeah. No, it is.
Labyrinth is pretty scary too, though.
I would say if
for
you,
a kid.
Just really quickly, if you have kids and you want to show them Dark Crystal, go ahead, but like gauge your kid. So if you've got a kid who gets scared easy, go ahead and show them not Dark Crystal. show them something else. My kid loves scary stuff. And she likes monsters, and she roots for the bad guy. So I showed her Dark Crystal, and she loved it. There were times when she got freaked out.
Did she love the Skeksis?
She did, yeah.
What was the name of the other guys, the other half of them?
Oh, God.
The ones that all just hummed.
I just watched this movie not that long ago. The Elders, yeah. What are their names? I can't remember.
Was it the Elders? Elders and the Skeksis?
I don't remember. There's also the woman with the glass eye that pops out.
The Muppet with the big tits.
Yeah, it's so creepy.
Shit is weird, man. Like, I want to say she's got nipples showing too. It's like, it's like super weird.
It's very highly detailed.
Oh, her name's Agra.
Yeah, Agra. And when she walks around, she goes bouge bouge bouge.
Skeksis and the Mystics.
Mystics, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So
we're totally we've gone from Samurai Jack
to Dark Crystal.
To Dark Crystal. We don't normally talk about the writers because, like, the writers can change episode to episode, but we wanted to talk about them today because the writers actually worked with each other.
They're pretty consistent all the way through the series, too. You know, some of these guys, like, they only worked on this, and then they did some other stuff. Like, one of the writers, he was a storyboard artist for, like, Iron Man and the Avengers and Thor and stuff. His name's Brian Andrews.
Like, those are the movies, not the cartoons.
Yeah, no, the movies. Yeah. But he co-created this cartoon show called Symbionic Titan, along with Tartakovsky, which I've never seen, but I kind of want to...
I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, you have?
It's a mecha show. It's a kaiju show, yeah.
Okay, I'm on board. And Brian Larson was a writer, worked on this, worked on other stuff. Chris Riccardi, who did Ren and Stimpy, Cow and Chicken.
All the really weird shows.
Yeah, and Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Dilbert, on The Simpsons, Tiny Toons.
But he also did, like, movies like Lego Movie and Wreck-It Ralph and Secret Life of Pets and Minions and stuff. So, like, some of these guys, like, they've done a lot of stuff. There's a new Lego movie called the Lego Ninjago movie, and it's directed by this guy named Charlie Bean, who was a writer for this, who was also, who worked on Batman Animated Series and Animaniacs and Dexter's Lab and stuff. Have you seen the preview for that? The Lego Ninjago movie?
I saw it.
It comes out in September.
I did see it. I had to explain to Kathy what Ninjago was.
Basically, it's Ninja Legos to market to boys. Yeah, that's what
there it was. There was Bionicle that was kind of like Ninja Legos, but then they actually just went full bore like Ninja, and they made Ninjago.
Yeah, and then one of these other writers, who's the third co-creator of Symbionic Titan, also was the art director for Star Wars Clone Wars, and was a character design storyboard work for Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, good for him!
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these guys, like, worked on Batman and worked on a bunch of the Cartoon Network stuff.
So you can tell that these are guys that enjoy working together. And they have a lot of creative juices flowing when they do work together because they tend to make pretty good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There's this one writer named Aaron Springer who was, like, a main writer for the first 8 seasons of SpongeBob.
Huh.
Like, he's one of the main writers for SpongeBob, writing for this show. I feel like, you know, none of these guys have worked on projects that have been considered terrible. Like, none of them, I don't think, have. Because we've covered some stuff in the past where it's like, they did good stuff. And then also Centurions.
Yeah.
Or, like, also Wheel Warriors, you know? But, like, none of that is the case here. One of the writers named Eric Weiss is the co-creator of The Mighty Bee, who's this...
I remember that one. That's like a John Kay... Like Ren and Stimpy.
It's Amy Poehler. It's an animated show with Amy Poehler.
Yeah, no, the other anime, I think the guy that created it, it's John Krakowski, the one that...
The third writer's, I believe, a woman.
No. It's in the style... It looks like it's in the style of, like, Ren and Stimpy.
Oh, yeah, right. I don't know, because I never saw it. But, like, I've read about
it's
it.
Super and it's super weird.
Is it weird? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's okay. Weird is good sometimes. I mean, this show's weird. But in a good way, the show's weird, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess the guy didn't have anything to do with it. But it looks... The Mighty Bee has the same sort of art style as Ren and Stimpy. Though it's not made by the same guy.
No. And then, you know, Genndy Tartakovsky, like, was in every facet of this. Like, he was a producer, an executive producer. He was a writer. He was a director.
Storyboard artist.
I mean, everything.
This show was very much like his baby. He did everything. From start to finish.
Yeah.
And it shows because the show you can tell has a very singular vision.
The
tone doesn't shift a whole lot. The characters don't start acting weird. Like,
yeah, they don't do anything that's, like, weirdly out of character. Everything is very consistent.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, like, and even with the directors for this too. They're all, like, big heavy hitters within this kind of stuff.
Within the animation community.
Yeah. Like, Randy Myers did Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, The Iron Giant, Fairly Odd Parents, Gravity Falls.
He did Cats Don't Dance. Did you ever see that movie?
No, I didn't.
Actually, it wasn't anthropomorphic. It was a weird world in which humans and anthropomorphic animals lived side by side, sort of. And the movie was about a cat, I can't remember the name of the cat, who wanted to be a dancer, but he was relegated to, like, being a background character because he was an animal, and there was like a Shirley Temple it like bad. It's a weird movie.
This sounds weird.
Yeah,
it's but a I want to see it now. I don't really necessarily think we need to go into like everything all these guys did. One of the directors, though, I didn't want to mention, has been around so long that he was the assistant animator for the 1968 Yellow Submarine.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was his first, like, big job. And that guy did, like, SWAT Cats and Scooby-Doo. Oh,
we have to do SWAT Cats at some point.
I Am Weasel, The Smurfs, G.I. Joe. I mean, that guy did a bunch of stuff. He has, like, a bunch of Emmys.
It's not, like, Emmys are really worth anything.
Well, when you start adding them up and you're like, I've got 6 Emmys and 9 primetime noms.
I could kill a man with my Emmys.
Yeah, like, when you could, like... put them into a gun and fire them and kill people with...
I'll melt them down into lead and gold.
Melt them down? No, just the Fallout gun.
Oh, yeah, that's right. What's that called?
The trash gun.
Yeah,
I always just call it the trash gun, but...
Trash gun.
You just throw junk in it. You just...
It was the junket. That's what it was called. The junket.
But, I always just call it the trash gun. I don't know. Emmys are... It seems like they hand a lot of them out, but, like, some of these guys... got a lot of Emmys, and this show got a lot of awards too.
Yeah,
I think it, like, award total, it was like 4 primetime Emmys, 6 Annie Awards, 1 OIAF, as well as like 8 additional nominations for, like, you know, outstanding show and animation and production and all this. Like, it won a ton of awards.
Now, you know, we talked about me watching the show. Did you ever watch the show when you were young?
Oh yeah. Like, well, because, you know, we're the same age. So,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I remember when the show first came out, and it was part of, like, the after school kind of, like, whatever.
Yeah, I want to say it was broadcast it was around, part like, of like, 3 or 4 o'clock.
It was part of, like, that Toonami.
Was it part of Toonami?
Well, now
it might have been, actually.
The show originally... had its initial run, and it's been picked up again, and it's now being shown again, but on the late night Toonami block.
Yeah, on the Adult Swim.
The Adult Swim Toonami block, yeah. But when it first aired, the 52 episodes that aired from 2001 to 2004, I believe it was on, like, the afternoon Toonami block, where they show, like, Dragon Ball and Ronin Warriors. And... you know, some of that other stuff. And
the first exposure so many young kids at our age group had to, like, anime.
Yeah, Gundam Wing.
Oh, Gundam Wing. Yeah, that was actually the first Gundam I ever saw.
The voice acting on Gundam Wing is terrible. So bad.
The one thing I remember is that
I just watched it, by the way.
John DiMaggio plays the one with the scythe.
Oh, yeah, no, he does.
Yeah. That was back in the day. A picture was recently posted of me by a friend of mine from back in the day when I was like 18 or 19, showing my awful room, parts of my awful room back when I was 18 or 19. But the parts that you didn't see is I had 2 shelves in my room.
Did you have like a Death Scythe wall scroll?
No, not a wall scroll. I had 2 shelves of snapped together Gundams.
Oh, Gundam toys.
And Dragon Ball characters. That was my jam. I loved getting those snap together characters.
Oh yeah, I think everybody has, like, well, not everybody, but like a lot of us.
I did have, not everybody,
but all of us nerds had I had multiple shelves that I had set up with like imported Japanese Legend of Zelda action figures, and you know,
I had posters all over my room. I remember the
Final Fantasy IX wall scroll, because, you know, why not?
I think the crowning achievement of my horrible, horrible room was it was some comic book store that I bought this at. It was a t-shirt that had Super Saiyan 4 Goku on it, on the back.
Okay.
But the shirt...
From GT?
Yeah. But the shirt itself was in Spanish on the front.
Yes.
So I actually nailed the shirt up on my wall just so that you could see the Goku on the back and you couldn't see all the Spanish on the front. I never wore the shirt. I just had it hanging
on
my
wall.
Do you
still have it?
No.
Oh, all that'd be amazing.
All the shit I had in that room is either gone, or my brother took it and then it
lost to time.
Yeah, once I moved out, my brother moved into my room and my younger brother moved into my room, and a lot of that stuff just disappeared. And
it's,
I don't know.
Gone.
Yeah. and Kathy always says that I tell her, like, if you knew if you knew young Sean, you probably wouldn't have been attracted to him. She goes, oh, I don't know. I kind of like that stuff too when I was your, when we were that age. I said, I don't think so.
No, I was a wee, you're like, yeah. I was a weeboo.
I was the guy that had like all the episodes of Dragon Ball Z in like shitty quality subs on a CD that we watched.
That you downloaded from like BearShare?
Yeah, or? Yeah. the videos were smaller than six. They were like the 280 by 320 like size, because those were the size you needed to fit them on a CD. Like, it was so, they were so shitty. And like my friends and I would crowd around the computer, and you couldn't make it big because it would just look awful. So we were crowding around the computer watching this tiny window and just, like, yeah, go, Gohan, go, oh, Goku, yeah.
That's so bad.
Oh, it was terrible. I was, yeah.
Yeah, so this...
I'm so glad I grew out of that.
Yeah, but we didn't.
We didn't.
Samurai Jack, I think, like, it totally fits sort of in that wheelhouse, kind of, for us. Like, I was, I would watch this show, like, in between classes or stuff, like when it was on in the daytime. Or when I was like late at night when I was studying or something, I would throw it on and it might show up like on late night Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
And I watched a lot of Samurai Jack back when it was on, and I'm pretty sure I watched it because it still played on like syndication later, like the different episodes.
So now I've got a new beer.
What do you got?
Interrupt. It's called Koedo Rooney or Ruri. Koedo Ruri. Beer Beautiful Premium Pilsner Super Premium Japanese Craft Beer.
Oh, is this the beer you picked up today?
Yeah. Let's see how it tastes.
See what we got.
Whoa! There we go.
Well.
Ooh.
Well, I...
Smells like a green beer.
A green beer?
Yeah, you know, beer that comes in a green bottle?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, that's okay.
Tastes like a green beer.
Well, I'm glad I bought my $7 a can crazy Japanese import stuff then.
Well, I mean, this is a Japanese import too.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like
imported by Craft Imports LLC.
Oh, it's one of those rice wine beers, probably. Or well, one of those rice beers, probably.
It's from Saitama, Japan. Isn't that the name of the guy in One Punch Man?
Saitama? Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, if you guys watch this show, the theme music is Will I Am from the Black Eyed Peas.
Oh, yeah. You can tell.
Yeah, no, you can totally
gotta
tell.
Gotta get back to the past, Samurai Jack. Jack.
And then the other half of the music is one of the key performing and recording musicians for Black Eyed Peas, a guy named George Pajon.
So Black Eyed Peas recorded the intro, essentially.
And
to...
the
Watch out!
The music at the end, because it's the same music.
It's the same music, yeah.
Yeah. But the composer, like all the filler music, is done by the guy who did the music for Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back and the Powerpuff Girls and some other stuff.
Bunch of the Scary Movies.
Yeah. Scary Movie 3, 4, and 5. Oh,
those are the best ones.
I think I only watched the first one, and then after that I said, nope, these are dumb.
I used to have the biggest crush on Anna Faris.
No.
She's the main chick.
That they would use for the Scary Movies?
Yeah. She's married to Chris Pratt.
Yeah. I don't know. Those movies are not for me, but...
They're not for me either.
No. It's that's okay. To each their own. Yeah. So, production company, though, is Cartoon Network Studios, which originally was part of Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah. That's why
I think they technically still are. They're like a division of Hanna-Barbera.
No, it's because Turner Broadcasting owns both things. Turner Broadcasting owns Hanna-Barbera and they own Cartoon Network.
Yeah, well,
they're like subsidiaries.
Well, it's like Cartoon Network was a spinoff of Hanna-Barbera, which is owned by Turner.
Yeah, no,
and
yeah.
So
Cartoon Network bought the
and then
rights.
They sort of separated, sort of, but they're still under Turner.
Yeah, if you ever watched, because my dad had cable before my mom did, and old Cartoon Network was basically the Boomerang stuff. It was the Yogi Bear and the Snagglepuss and Huckleberry Hound and the Jetsons and the Flintstones and all that shit. Like, that's all that they played on Cartoon Network because that's all they had. That's why I started watching Johnny Quest, because Johnny Quest was a Hanna-Barbera property too.
Well, and then they also had the Redux. The
new
remake.
One?
Bump,
well,
bump. Bump. That one was good, though. I enjoyed that. I haven't seen it since, so I have no idea if it's any good, but I remember it being cool when I was a kid.
It had some really, really bad CGI in it because they would go into Quest World.
I don't remember any of this. Oh, so
yeah, they had this virtual world that they could go into, and it would just turn them from like regular animated people into like CGI animated people because they were in a computer. Terrible. And it was like they jumped into Reboot because those shows were on around the same time.
We should do Reboot.
Yeah, Reboot is a good show.
Yeah, but it get like the story, if I remember right, like towards the end starts getting convoluted and crazy.
Yeah.
But
I remember seeing a joke. It was like back in the 90s, parents believed that when you played games on computers, basically the plot of Reboot was happening in the computer. That's why they thought that you were ruining the computer by playing your games, because every time you beat the game, it would like destroy part of the computer. That's why they didn't want you to put computer games on the...
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's bitches.
It's like, no, old people, we're fine. We can use it. It will not break your computer.
Yeah. This is because you have your Nintendo games on my computer.
Oh, God. Yeah, I had so many emulators loaded on the computer. Around that 99 to, 2003 range, my family's computer in the kitchen.
yeah. All you kids out there that might be listening to this, we lived in a time where if you had a computer, it was usually in, the living room or the kitchen or something. And
good luck with your porn.
Yeah. If you wanted porn, you had to get up in the middle of the night
and download it and print it out.
Yeah, and hope that the modem wasn't loud enough that it would wake your parents up.
Yeah, exactly.
You get that.
Yeah, that's when you accidentally download some altered image of Captain Janeway.
Yeah.
You're like, nope, not for me.
Nope. That's where you download, you had 10 pictures downloading at once, and then you would watch to see how they were coming, and if you're like, nope, I don't like it, you just click it out so that it would download the rest of them faster.
Oh, that's so true. But that was just with anything.
Yeah. Did you ever shove like a pillow back behind the computer to get it to be quieter when it was tiling the internet?
No.
No,
I didn't actually have issues with the, because my dad worked for the phone company, so we had we had pretty good internet.
You had like a T1 line in 1997?
No, I wish. No, yeah. But I did ask my dad why we couldn't have it. He said, because I don't want to spend that much money for a D1.
We upgraded. We went from a 14.4 to a 33.6, and then went from a 33.6 to a cable modem. My mind was blown. I never had the 56K. I was absolutely blown away by how much faster it was when it went from 33.6 to a cable modem. I could not believe it.
That was just a new life.
Yeah. that old computer I had, the one that had the 33.6 modem, it only had 500 megabyte hard drive. I had one game that I had to keep deleting and reinstalling. I had Duke Nukem 3D.
Well, even with the 56, I would have... I had emulators and stuff loaded on the hard drive, and then a bunch of Nintendo and Super Nintendo games and stuff that I would download and play.
Yeah.
And, but you'd play them with a keyboard.
Yeah. I played Duke Nukem 3D with a keyboard for probably a year.
Oh, before you got a mouse?
Well, no, I had a mouse. I just thought it would...
It's better that way,
To me, using the keyboard was way easier.
Well, yeah, but not playing Super Mario RPG or Street Fighter 2 or, any of those. No. But... You know, we're not here to talk about that.
No, we're not.
Here about something else. But, you know, it was a different time for sure. And this, I think for me, this show, it kind of gave me a lot of nostalgia to watch.
Yeah.
Because the music, and the voice, too, is Phil Lamar, which is, he's from Mad TV.
He's done a lot of voice work, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's Hermes from Futurama.
Yep.
So, and he was also Marvin from Pulp Fiction. The guy that they killed.
Yeah, he's also, if you watch...
Spoiler.
If you watch...
spoilers from 92, right?
Seriously. If you watch Justice League, the animated one, Justice League Unlimited, or the regular Justice League, he plays John Stewart, Green Lantern.
Yeah, he's the main Green Lantern. And so the one that I pointed out, because I remember his voice from that, and so that's why I put it in our coverage here, was he's the leader of the Hidden Becks, which was a swoop gang... that was operating in the lower city of Terrace from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic.
Yeah, he was.
His name was Gaddon Thek, and I remember him because I love the crap out of that game.
Yeah. The voice that he uses as Gaddon is essentially the same voice he uses as Green Lantern.
Yeah, and he uses that
it's
voice
very
for, like,
deep. What are we doing here? Brr, brr, brr.
He uses it for, like, a lot of other stuff. Do you remember his Funky Walker Dirty Talker from Mad TV?
No,
did you watch a lot of Mad TV?
I watched some of it. I remember the UBS guy.
The UBS guy? Yeah. Well, you work for FedEx at one point, right? So, yeah like, okay. Weird flashback.
Hey, what's going on? I got a box for you.
It's kind of accurate.
Yeah.
And then Aku, who's, like, the villain. There's really only a couple voice
Aku.
Actors in this.
Yeah.
I mean,
shape-shifting master of evil.
He was the one that I remembered him from as a kid was... he's the wizard Akira from the Conan movies.
Yeah, no, he's played by Mako Iwamatsu. I always just call him Mako,
yeah,
but it's Iwamatsu.
Yeah, and of course he's Iroh from Avatar.
Yeah, Uncle
which,
Iroh.
We were talking about this today when we went to go grab lunch that, you know, I watched Samurai Jack when it came out, and then I didn't get to watch Avatar The Last Airbender until it had been out for several years. I didn't watch it really until maybe like 2009, 2010, maybe. Yeah, maybe somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And no, maybe later, actually. And so I had forgotten that he was the whatever. I was like, oh, that sounds like Aku. And then it just kind of filed it away. And then you watch all these seasons of Avatar. And then... I watched the whole series of Avatar again, like, maybe a year ago. And so, when I went back to watch this again, just recently, I was like, oh, it's Iroh. Like,
yeah.
For me, his voice is so Iroh that he's not even Aku anymore.
See, to me, I'm the opposite. Like, to me, first and foremost, he's Aku. And then, when I watched Avatar, I was like, oh, hey, look, that's Aku. It's Uncle Aku.
Yeah.
The funny thing about... the way that the voices are is that Phil LaMarr as Jack doesn't usually have a ton of lines. He doesn't do a whole lot of talking. So you get this very...
He does have some, but
He's
almost very quiet, very somber.
And he talks like this. Like he has a very specific way of speaking. And I want to say that it's almost like a Clint Eastwood, like a, hey, what are you doing? Like type of thing. Like
it's
sort of breathless.
It's a little airy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's breathless and it's very to the point, and he'll just say like yes or no, and like that's it.
Yeah, he's his dialogue is kind of written to be very short anyways,
mm-hmm.
but
he's a samurai.
But like that's the beauty of the show is like, you know, I was talking to you earlier. It's like the third episode was it like Jack does so like in the third episode. Jack says something, there's some like dialogue and whatever after the intro, and for me, like, this is the episode like I always remember for Samurai Jack. I don't know why, but it's this episode that like when I think of Samurai Jack is the one that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jack like sits down, he like formulates his badass plan to like fight these robots or whatever with these like dogs that are way far in the future and can talk, which is silly, but whatever. And there's, at I think, like, the 4 or 5 minute mark is the last time that there's dialogue until 21, 22 minutes into the show. So
you go, like, 15 minutes with no dialogue.
And you don't, and that's not, I'm not saying that as a criticism.
No, absolutely not.
Not at all. I mean, there's a little bit of dialogue, and then there's a montage sequence where they're prepping and making armor and making all this cool stuff, and you're like, okay, yeah, that's cool. That takes, like, 5 minutes. And then it goes right into the battle sequence, which is like another 8 minutes of just pure awesome with no vocalized anything until about the 20 minute mark when the only thing that you get is some kind of grunts or like yells from Samurai Jack as he's like slicing through a robot.
Yeah.
And then a couple more minutes go by and then we get some dialogue at the very end.
Yeah.
And most of these episodes, this one is like kind of extreme in that, and I remember it being that way. That's why I took the time to like figure out the time of like whatever. But they're all kind of like this. Like, there's just not a lot of dialogue. And that's okay. The dialogue that they have is fine. And they do a good job, but there's
almost none.
No, and you know what? I just looked it up because I couldn't remember what it was. But there was a Marvel did a series. I mean, it wasn't a series. It was they were like an event. The comic book was called Nuff Said, and it would be whatever Spider-Man Nuff Said or Elektra Nuff Said, where the entire comic book had no dialogue. It was the entire comic book. The story was
just
told
action,
just in pictures, no dialogue, no commentary, no nothing. And I feel like for a lot of Samurai Jack, that's what happened. You get the story told to you in pictures. And I was thinking, and it might be a little hyperbolic, but as I was watching this and as I was remembering...
Well, and the music, too.
Well, and the music, yeah. As I was
watching... The music is very thematic.
Yes. It hypes you up, or it makes you sad, or it makes you realize that, like, the danger's past or the danger's coming or whatever. But as I was watching this and I was thinking back to watching it in the past... I really think, and it, like I said, this might be a little bit hyperbolic, but I really think that Genndy Tartakovsky is probably one of the best animation storytellers in modern times.
Yeah.
Because you can have almost an entire, like you were saying, like this episode, episode 3, you can have almost an entire episode with no dialogue. And you know exactly what's going on. You know exactly the stakes. You know exactly what needs to happen. All the emotion is conveyed. All the danger is conveyed. All of the sentiment is conveyed. And nothing is lost. And it's based in large part in the way the animation is and the way the scene direction, which Tartakovsky wrote and directed most of these first couple episodes.
Well, and there's this quote, you know, this show is like it widely, this show is widely loved amongst people who follow animation. It regularly makes top 50 and top 100 lists all the time. I think it even has made a few like top shows of all time.
I would put it up
not
there.
Animated. Even.
I would. Well, in terms of animation, I would definitely put it. In probably indefinitely like the top 50 of all time. I would say almost like the top 20 of all time.
Well, and I would say that, you know, the animation style is very simplistic. There are definitely shows that we've watched, movies that we've watched, in which the literal quality of the artistry of animation is on a whole nother level.
See, but I was thinking about
this. But you know what, though? The thing is it doesn't matter. Because the way in which they tell the story with that animation is like half the battle.
And, you know, I was thinking about this earlier too. Is if you've never seen the show, you should and go out and watch it. But if you've never seen it, Samurai Jack is a very stylized show.
You know what it reminds me of is Japanese woodblock.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But so it's a very stylized show. It has its own style. It doesn't really, other than other, like, Tartakovsky products, it doesn't really draw from anything else. It's its own self-contained thing.
Yeah.
So, you look at some of the older shows, you know, period pieces from the 60s, from the 70s, they all have a style that is very indicative of that time. A lot of the cartoons from the 70s look the same animation-wise.
This is super timeless.
A lot of the cartoons from the 60s look the same animation-wise. Same thing with the 80s. Same thing with the 90s. And that's the thing. That's the point that I came to, is that these stylized shows, and it's not just shows, really. It's anything. I think of, like, games, too. Stylized media is timeless because you can't pinpoint it to a time period. Like, I feel like if the show had never aired, but they had produced all the same episodes and they broadcast it today in 2017,
you would never know.
You would never know that show was made almost 20 years prior, because there's nothing to compare it to.
No,
there's nothing where you could say, like, oh, this kind of looks like this or this kind of looks like this.
I mean, it was 16 years ago. There are kids now who are driving who were born when Samurai Jack came out.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. And, like, the thing is you could show the show to them and be like, hey, this new show is cool. They would have no idea.
Yeah. None. And that's I think that's probably the strongest. Well, no, there's so many strong
arguments for the show.
Yeah. Because you have. I mean, it's funny. I want to say you have great writing And it is great writing.
Yeah.
But when
the
you truth say
is,
great,
the story is kind of the same every episode.
Yeah, but the what I mean by great writing is that each episode is super engaging and super... It's.
Do you remember, it's not one of the ones we watched, but there's one later where Jack has heard about... it's in this first season because I watched the whole first season. It's one where he hears this rumor about like a well that will grant any wish. And it's at the top of this tower and it's snowing and it's very highly... this episode is highly stylized.
Is it like the black and white episode?
It's... well, it's not all black and white, but it's okay. A lot of black and white because it's snow and shadows.
Okay.
And there's these three kind of semi-dog humans...
yes.
...on top of the tower who are shooting bows and arrows.
Yeah, they're the blind guardians.
Yes. Well, he figures out, like, halfway through that they're blind, and so he blindfolds himself and, like, entunes himself with, like, the nature and everything else.
Yeah.
And, like, everything melts away, and he can visualize snow falling and all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful to watch. But basically, it's the same story as all the other ones. He hears about something that could take him back to his time. And he goes to try and get it. And it doesn't work out. Happens every episode. But it's so engaging in the way that they do it that you don't care.
See, that's what I mean. Is the quality of the storytelling is such that you can essentially watch the same thing over and over and over. Just told in a different way. And you are still completely engaged. Completely wrapped. And you're going to want to watch the next one, even knowing that the next one is going to be the same thing, just in a different... It's the same gift, just wrapped up differently.
Right.
Every time.
Well, there's this...
And that episode, by the way, that episode is the basis of... This is sort of new agey, but that episode for me is the basis of one of the ways that, like, I meditate and calm down. Is I... So what happens in the episode, like you said, is he blindfolds himself and he sits down and he listens to everything. And in his mind's eye, he like essentially draws everything. He draws
in
like
his
a river.
Uh-huh.
He draws grass. He
deers
draws trees,
eating grass.
Deers
and, yeah.
doing stuff. And that's one of the ways that I like meditate and try to clear my mind is I imagine essentially a piece by piece building like essentially a meadow.
Like yeah, first in your brain with what you hear.
Exactly. And even not... Well, the way I do it is not... I just imagine it. And as I imagine it, I hear it. But, I mean, I don't live by a meadow. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's... I learned something about myself from watching the show. Like,
how often
can you say that?
It's not very often.
Yeah.
And there's this great... there's this great quote by this film critic named Matt Seitz, who works for RogerEbert.com. And he says, although Tartakovsky is a good storyteller in a silent movie sort of way, expressing what's happening moment to moment through picture and sound rather than in dialogue, I never watched either of these programs for their plots. He's also talking about Star Wars Clone Wars. And I don't rewatch them for the narrative either. I rewatch them for the same reason that I visit art museums, attend live concerts, and pause during journeys from point A to point B in New York to watch dancers, acrobats, or street musicians. Because I appreciate virtuosity for its own sake. And that's what Tartakovsky's Clone Wars and Samurai Jack give you. Scene for scene, shot for shot, the plot was never the point. It was always about the visual music that Tartakovsky, his designers, and his animators created on screen. I feel like that is the most... That's why I wanted to include this.
Yeah.
It is the most accurate description of this show.
Yeah.
I don't watch for the plot.
Visual music, that is a perfect descriptor for what the show is and how you end up feeling while you're watching it.
Hell, Phil Lamar loved making the show so much that when the show came back, he offered to work for free, or he was going to offer to work for free, and then they offered to pay him before he had a chance to volunteer to work for free.
Yeah.
Like, that says something, that the guy would be willing to do it for free.
I don't think the union would have allowed him to work for free.
Well, probably not.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's like... That's such, for me, like a resounding endorsement.
Yeah, and one of the things too that I think is different, I guess, about this show is that I don't know if you remember because I remember from watching it in the past, and you watched the first season. I don't know when the transition happens, but at a certain point, you start to like Aku.
Oh no, because he
becomes more of a character.
They write him to be funnier
as
the show goes on. I think it's like the second season, they start to write, second or third season, they start to write him to be kind of funny.
Yeah. Because in the beginning, Aku is like, oh, samurai, I am going to destroy you and your village.
And he's super serious.
Yeah.
But then he becomes almost like Loki, kind of like the mischievous prankster. In
yeah, he does. There's a lot more like gag takes with him where like yes. something happens and he's like, whoa! And he becomes so much more a character that you enjoy and you want to see more of. And that sort of creates another conflict where you're like, well, I don't want Jack to destroy him. Like, maybe Aku's not so bad.
Yeah, but I mean, always at the end of the day, you're like, oh, he just oppressed like 40 billion people. Yeah, Aku's bad. But like,
yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of root for him because like he's funny and he's entertaining.
He's charismatic.
Yeah, and you kind of don't want them to kill Aku because... then you lose out on that in the storytelling.
Yeah.
You know?
He sort of becomes towards the end because there's... I mean, Aku's evil or whatever has permeated the entire world. So
and the universe.
And the universe. So there's all these, like, robots. Oh, that was the other thing that I wanted to talk about is this show gets around the violence inherent in the storytelling, which is a samurai with an enchanted sword...
That can cut through anything.
That can cut through anything, cutting his way to Aku. And so... In all
they
the
just have them fight robots.
Yeah, in all the episodes that we watched, and I
or
think...
Or they're aliens.
Yeah, yeah, either they're aliens...
Did you notice the episode, the Star Wars episode 4 homage in the bar scene in the second episode?
Oh, yeah, he cuts off the guy's
he
arm.
He cuts off the... Well, no, he, like, bumps into a guy, is like, oh, I don't mean any disrespect, yeah. I don't want any trouble. He's like, oh, well,
you've got trouble.
Yeah, you've got trouble.
I've got the death sentence on 5 systems.
Yeah,
or seven systems.
Whatever the Star Wars quote is, yeah. And he chops a guy's arm off, and there's a battle that enrages.
Yeah, and all in that scene, all the arms that he chops off are all robot arms.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that Samurai Jack, he has a sword, like, that's his weapon, and he always either is fighting robots or some kind of robotic part, like, that's what he'll chop off on an alien, or he'll fight... like nondescript monsters that aren't really personified. They're not anthropomorphic. They're just big giant snakes or big giant monsters.
Right. And then that's more okay.
Yeah. And yeah, because he's not...
But when they do it, they'll do like the Kill Bill silhouette thing.
Yeah, it'll be a stylized cut where he'll be silhouetted and he'll cut it and you won't see any blood or anything. It'll just it'll fall apart.
But then when they do the fighting of the robots, like, it'll be like oil shooting out. He's like covered in black goo.
Yeah,
and
no,
stuff.
I like how they humanize the robots
in
a
that one scene where the
scenes...
robot, like, he kills thousands of these robots and they're just robots.
Yeah.
And then he goes to take a step back, and then the robot goes to take a step back, and basically that's when you get that first piece of dialogue in that third episode or whatever.
There's no turning back or something.
Yeah,
there's
it's
no
like,
retreat.
No, there's no escape.
Yeah. And that was after he chopped up a bunch of robots and got covered. Like, you just, if you take away the fact that they're robots and just imagine that they're like people, and he's chopping the shit out of them and getting sprayed with oil, which is essentially him getting covered in blood, in robot blood. By the end of it, he's soaked head to toe in oil, robot blood. And then he turns to look at the other robots.
And they step back.
And they're like, holy shit. And yeah, they step back. And he goes, no. There is no escape. And then he, like, charges at him and kills them. And you're holy...
But they're like, giant beetle monsters. But, like, it's funny because, like, that is both a funny moment, but also a badass moment.
Yeah, and
the show's full of them.
And it happens more than once where he goes through killing a bunch of things, and then a couple of the group of robots will look and be like, fuck this shit, we're out, and they'll either leave or they'll try to leave and they'll get killed.
Yeah, it happens all the time. Yeah. I you know what's kind of cool about this show is I would say, in my opinion, that this is definitely a show you could throw on while you're cooking or doing something, whatever. You won't feel too bad if, like, you have to look away and do something else, because it's just a big piece of artwork. And so every time you look at it, there's something new or interesting happening.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this show is definitely of an age pre-binge, and I think a lot of these shows...
You need some time between each episode.
A lot of these shows that we've been watching, because we're like, what, 37 episodes into this podcast now?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, 30, whatever. And of all the stuff we've watched, almost none of what we've watched would I recommend you binge the shit out of.
Because all those shows were made to be watched in a weekly manner. It's like any serialized show. if you watch too many of them in a row, you pick up on all of the beats all the time. You see, okay, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. And it almost gets to be boring.
Yeah. It's, I would say the only stuff that I would recommend, like, for binging, really, because I think this should kind of go
without saying. Serial stuff can be binged.
Serial stuff, like, when there's ongoing story that happens episode to episode to episode, everything carries through, and there's a big story arc that you're following that gets convoluted and complicated, especially with, like, a lot of anime. Okay, go ahead and binge watch that.
Yeah.
Or you're watching some show with, like, 9 seasons, like, Supernatural or whatever. You're watching...
You're watching anything past, I think, season 3 from Supernatural when it turns into just, like, a long, drawn-out soap opera.
Yeah, then you got to, like, really follow along. And it's okay to binge it then. But, like, shows like this, I would say it actually benefits from not binging. I would say...
You watch a couple of them.
Yeah, so my recommendation, at least for this show, is watch them in a way that, like, watch the first 3 episodes kind of at once, because they're all kind of one big arc. Watch those, put them in your pocket, walk away, and come back and just watch, like, the occasional one here, one there. Try not to binge them if you can. And then whenever you have, like, a 2-parter, maybe go ahead and binge them, because screw it, you can. But I don't think this show benefits from binging. And I say that as somebody who's watched the whole first season, like, within the last, like, 3 days. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that.
Yeah.
But...
No, I agree. A lot of these shows, like you said, a lot of them, if they're episodic, you need to break in between them, because otherwise you're going to get bored of them.
Yeah. And this is not one you want to get bored with. I promise.
It's good. A super good show.
It's really good, and you really don't want to destroy it by binging the crap out of it. And that's not to say that you couldn't. I mean, maybe you watch it and you fall in love with it and you do want to binge it. Okay, fine. I'm not here to judge. But my recommendation, at least, is don't binge it. You know, spread it out. Watch the whole thing. And then once it's something that you have memories of and you want to binge it, okay, maybe, sure, but...
And you didn't say, but you told me earlier, Eleanor loves this show.
Like ridiculously loves this show. As I mentioned, like, it's not... I've said this on earlier shows where, you know, a lot of times I have to coax her into watching the first episode. And then she's like, she'll watch a couple of the episodes that we cover. Because I don't make her watch every episode that we watch for the show. Like, I'm not going to have my kid watch that much television. But for this one, she loves the crap out of. You know, there's a few shows that I could put on at any time and she'll watch. And I'd say that this is probably on the list now. This, Batman the Animated Series, Darkwing Duck, DuckTales. And then what's the other one? Real Ghostbusters.
Mm.
Because Real Ghostbusters is up on Netflix. It has been for a while now. And that's definitely another one in there that I can put on and she's always going to watch. But if you've got kids at home, for sure, go ahead and let them watch it. I mean, it's just a little bit of violence. But, you know, you got a 5-year-old. It's not like they're watching anything worse anyways.
Yeah.
You're probably letting them watch worse stuff as it is. This will kind of satisfy their 5-year-old bloodlust without there being any blood. So, you know, and also without sugarcoating the action. Like, sometimes there's consequences. And that's kind of nice to see in a kid's show. I would definitely recommend it.
I'd recommend it too. If you're our age or if you've seen the show, go back and rewatch it. I mean, like Chris said, don't do it. Don't binge it. But go back and rewatch a couple episodes here and there. It's really worth it to go back and see it because it really is like a work of art. It's something that is super, super pretty to watch. You look at this show and you just look at the way that it's been stylized and the way the scenes have been like mapped out and the direction of it. It's honestly, to me, it's one of the best animated shows that's ever been made. Ever. Like, Tarkovsky? Yeah.
I wouldn't say that the actual animation in the detail... I mean, there's...
I just mean as an overall. Like, yes, overall, okay. This is one of the best animated shows ever made.
In that regard, I agree.
In not just in America, but like anywhere. Like this,
just in general.
Yeah, this is...
They're able to convey so much with so little.
Yeah.
Just go watch it, you guys. Go watch it. I mean, really. If you don't have it, like, readily available, there are websites you can go and find it at. You know,
but Cartoon Network has it, I think, some of them.
They might have some of them. But, you know, you can find the DVDs really cheap right now, too. If you want to just, like, if you want to
hard copy. You can rent seasons from Amazon.
Yeah, if you're somebody who wants, like, hard copy stuff, like, you can go purchase the DVDs on Amazon real cheap. And you can also rent them on the Amazon Video. And then there are streaming sites you can stream them from, too. You know, for good quality stuff, I'm definitely, you know, I'm about supporting the artists, and for sure this is one you want to support them on. This is a really beautiful and I feel like underappreciated show by most people. Of course critics love this,
yeah, and
but most of the people I talk to, I'm like, yeah, have you seen Samurai Jack? They're like, yeah, I've heard of it, but that's it.
Yeah,
you know, they don't, I feel like it's not something that really gets enough publicity on. And now it's back because they brought it back to finish out and conclude the storyline with the fifth season. And I
watched, yeah, and that was one of the biggest problems with the show, is that it ended on a cliffhanger, but it, like,
without being resolved.
Yeah.
So we're gonna get a resolution for this last season.
Thank God. And
have you watched it?
I haven't watched it.
I have. I've watched it. It's great.
Yeah.
That's actually what made me want to do it. Is I've been watching the new episodes, and they're phenomenal. I would say they're better.
Well, he's had 10 years to,
yeah,
or 12 years to come up with
15. Well, since the first episode, or yeah, 15. But yeah, there's more dialogue in the new season, but not by that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's still the same style. So
yeah,
I think that's gonna do it for us this week.
Yeah, absolutely. If you like this episode or any of the other episodes, you just want to talk to us, you can always hit us on Twitter. Twitter handle is @remasteredcast. We also have a Facebook.
Yes. Just go to our Facebook page. We're willing to engage there and Twitter. You know, we'll post updates. We'll respond to questions. There's also old-timey email if you want to head along on the Pony Express.
Childhoodremastered@gmail.com.
Yeah, and our music, too. You know, big thank you to John Haworth.
John Haworth. The song is called Nascent. There's a link on our webpage, childhoodremastered.com, to his SoundCloud. Check him out. He's got a lot of good electronic music.
And please, please rate us on wherever you're listening, because the algorithm is stupid. And, you know, we want people to enjoy what we enjoy. And yep, we want you to be able to share this with the people you enjoy. So yeah, go rate us.
Give us a comment.
Give us all the stars, all the comments.
All the comments.
All the good comments. And that's it for this week.
Yeah, that'll do it. I had fun. This was a good episode. I really liked this show. So until next time, this is Sean.
And Chris.
And this has been your Childhood Remastered. We will see you next time. Yeah.